I know the Cavs are back. That's big news, too. But Kevin Stefanski has given away his play-calling duties to Ken Dorsey. Kevin says he's got full confidence in Ken, while none of us have confidence in any of it because they are 1-6. And obviously, this weekend, you got a big divisional matchup with the Ravens. Jameis Winston's a starter. So many different things to get to with our next guest. He joins us every single... Is today Wednesday? Today is Wednesday. It's hump day. He joins us every single Wednesday at 4 o'clock. On the line is Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross joins us now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. You said, you know, he joined us every, and you didn't know what day it was?
No, it's been, we're kind of listening closer and closer to the black hole of this Brown season just being the absolute bleep burger of all time. And between that, and we actually have nice weather in Cleveland, it is fritzing out my brain, Ross.
It's so funny that you say that. This might be the nicest October 23rd of all time. I'm literally walking outside as I talk to you because it's that nice here in central Pennsylvania. Same thing.
Well, I got to say, you're a man of your word. You followed me on the TikTok. TikTok. So I got to give you a shout out. If I'm going to bust your haggis for the two previous times, I got to give you credit. You're a man of your word, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know it on TikTok once, but you're welcome.
Listen, it means something. It just means more. It's like the SEC. What is your reaction to Ken Dorsey being the new play caller in Cleveland after a 1-6 start and Deshaun Watson now being out for the season?
I guess I would say curious and maybe a little bit confused. I think you know this, but I'm on the call Sunday for CBS for Ravens-Browns. So I'll be there. I'm coming to the land tomorrow night, actually, late tomorrow night. So I'll be there for the whole weekend. I guess this is maybe just the way my brain works, Nick. And I'll be curious to talk to Kevin Stefanski on Friday and ask him about this. But the way my brain works, I kind of wanted to see Jameis with Stefanski calling the plays. Does that make sense? Like, I wanted to see how the offense operated with Jameis as the starting quarterback, Jameis getting all the practice reps as the starting quarterback, and see what it looked like. Because then we would have the best sort of apples-to-apples comparison of what the offense looked like with Watson when Stefanski was calling it versus what it looked like with Winston with Stefanski calling it. Now we're kind of messing with two variables at the same time. Now we have a new quarterback and a new play caller. So if it's like wildly successful, how do you know how much of that is Jameis and how much of that is Dorsey calling the plays? Now, obviously, I'm guessing that these two things are separate, right? So on the one hand, the Browns have not scored 20 points yet, so Stefanski's kind of giving up the sticks, giving up the controllers, if you will, to Dorsey and giving him a chance. Okay. But then also now we've got Jameis because of the injuries to Watson and DTR. He's going to start. So, listen, maybe it works out wonderfully. I guess we'll see. My brain does better when we only change one thing at a time, if that makes sense.
It does. It definitely felt like the Browns went from making no changes for 7 weeks, and then Deshaun blows out Achilles, and they go, "Well, why don't we just make all the changes there?" So, you know, this leads to the next part of the conversation, which is, and there's been this constant conversation because it's gotten ugly. It's got whether it's, you know, the players calling out fans for this idea that they cheered Deshaun's injury, whether it is Deshaun's injury, the fact that that feels like the final straw for Deshaun in Cleveland, like whichever we're at here now with the play calling thing, it does feel like we're about to see some same old Browns kind of bleep from this organization. Have you seen enough to suggest Kevin Stefanski is in danger this season of losing his job?
I have not. That would surprise me. I do think on some level, the rest of the season does matter. Because it's kind of another one of those deals where if they finish strong, sort of like they did last year with Flacco and make the playoffs and he's coach of the year, you know, that was obviously a very impressive coaching job by Stefanski. So, you know, there's still a lot of football to be played. If they're, you know, 500 or better during the second half of the year, that would kind of lend itself once again to suggest that Stefanski's a pretty darn good coach with anybody other than Deshaun Watson as the quarterback, I guess. I mean, you know, they just signed both those guys to extensions in the offseason, both Stefanski and Andrew Berry. And the guys won the Coach of the Year 2 out of the last 4 years. Now, I'm not saying he's been some awesome coach this year, but to fire a guy the year after he wins Coach of the Year, for the second time in whatever it is, 3 or 4 years, that seems like a stretch. That seems like short-sighted. I wouldn't do it. Go back and look at some of the down years that, like, Bill Cowher had in Pittsburgh. I think just because you have a terrible season doesn't mean you necessarily have to get rid of the coach, because it could be worse, and in Cleveland, it's been a lot worse. I think you guys know you have a good coach now. Now, maybe this hasn't been his best year, and maybe there's a lot of extenuating circumstances. Maybe, obviously, there's several issues, and Deshaun Watson's performance being one of them. I think it would be very short-sighted, and it would be the type of move that is made really just to try to appease the fan base or media. If they let go of Stefanski, I think it'd be the type of move that you make almost like a sacrificial lamb, because the people that make those decisions, like Jimmy Haslam, and I don't know who else is involved, his wife or Dee Podesta or whatever, they know that Stefanski is a good coach. They know that. So if they fire him, it's really just trying to point the finger at someone and have a sacrificial lamb, like I said, as opposed to the harder move at that point, which is to stick with it. I feel like it's easy. Just fire somebody. Then we can all just blame him. Just fire somebody. I feel like that's the easy move to make. The tougher move is say, okay, what can we do with this core group of people that we believe in to get a heck of a lot better than we were this year?
How's that different, though? Because I agree with you. I do think way too often it's the easy thing when it comes to head coaches and GMs. But how's that different from how we treat quarterbacks on any given year? Well, the simple thing is, for whatever reason, hasn't worked out with Deshaun or previously Baker, so just throw him out and we'll get a new one in here.
Yeah, I don't think it is that different. I think most of the time there's only so many levers that an organization can pull, and we see that right now from the Jets, right, where there's these different levers that they can pull, and it's fire the head coach, it's change the play caller, it's change the quarterback, it's make a big move or big trade. I mean, there's like a guide that these owners have somewhere, right? Like idiot's guide to how to try to have a successful NFL season. And I don't know, it doesn't seem like those type of franchises that are constantly pulling levers like the Jets, it doesn't seem like that works very often. You know, it seems like the franchises that never make those moves and are more boring, like the Packers, I don't know, it seems like they typically have more success. So to your point, I don't think it's the same. The difference, I would say, is that, at least in this example, that Stefanski has a much more proven track record over the last 3 or 4 years, in particular in Cleveland, than Deshaun Watson does. Much, much more. And unlike Deshaun Watson, he hasn't gotten, you know, injured, which is part of the deal for a quarterback. Now, also, unlike Deshaun Watson, he's not making over $40 million fully guaranteed. You know, so maybe it does become a situation where it's easier to change out the head coach than the quarterback. I guess we'll find out, in part, based on how the rest of the season goes.
Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotliner Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase a Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add some deliciousness, extra deliciousness, and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. My read started out with such purpose and really just upside in that first read, and then I damn near drove the thing off the embankment on that one, Ross. Do you think there's any chance we see Deshaun Watson start a game for the Cleveland Browns again?
I think it's unlikely, but life is about options, right? Like, let's see how Winston looks the rest of the year. If he's struggling, they put DTR in. Let's see how he looks. Then let's see exactly where the Browns are drafting and what their options are there, because I don't think they're going to have very many options when it comes to Deshaun Watson and moving on from that contract. I mean, if anything, maybe they can restructure it again where he still gets his $45 million a year each of the next 2 years. But for cap purposes, they can spread it out a little bit more. And I don't know, man, we could be looking at a situation where they just have him stay home, or I guess, you know, I guess he'd just be the world's most expensive backup quarterback, maybe. I think that'd be an awkward situation for whoever the starter is, but if you have to have somebody as a backup, I think he's a pretty darn good backup. Obviously, he'd be making a lot more money than anybody else, but he has to be on the roster. You have to be paying him anyway, because I just don't think anybody else is going to want to take on that contract or that situation. So he kind of becomes like an albatross hanging around their neck. By the way, I don't even know what an albatross is. I just know that it hangs around your neck and you don't like it. What the heck is an albatross? Like, I know it's a real thing, but all I know is like the sports version of it.
Yeah, it's a bird, although I don't think that's the.
But why is that the expression? Like, why is the expression when you have something hanging around it, it's like a bird hanging off your neck? When did that happen?
Maybe
way back in the day.
Maybe people just don't like birds. I mean, maybe that's how this got. I mean, I think it's a great question, by the way.
That is the question. So I'm so curious to talk to Kevin and see Stefanski and see why they made the move. And we'll see, because I think I'd also like to see Winston in sort of Kevin's base offense with, you know, the stretch play, the boots, the outside zone, the play action, which they did more of on Sunday, by the way, against the Bengals. They did more of that with Chubb back in the lineup. But I don't know. I don't know that we're going to get that, and we'll see what Dorsey has.
Well, Ross, the term albatross comes from Samuel Taylor Coleridge's 1798 poem, "The Rime of the Ancient Mariner," in which an albatross visits the mariner and his crew, and the albatross is traditionally believed to bring bad luck. So it is about the bird.
So it's not like hanging around. It just brings bad luck.
Yeah, like a black cat on All Hallows Eve or something like that.
Got it. Well, I mean, Deshaun Watson has both been bad luck and had bad luck since he's been, and it's really for the last go of it. I mean, I'm not going to go there in terms of the off the field stuff, but man, he's had a unique 4 years here. Really unique.
Yeah, did we ruin him? Did he ruin us? I don't know.
Well, and listen, some of it, obviously, a lot of it is evidently his own wrongdoing, but still a lot for any one person to handle, right or wrong, and whether you're happy to deal with it or not, that's up to you, but still a lot to put on one relatively young man.
Ross, we're talking quarterbacks in the draft. I have made a pledge. I am not talking draft, meaning I will not espouse draft opinions until the first week of December. There's no shot in hell I'm keeping it up. There's just none. We're like 3 weeks away from this, tops. But as you are not just an NFL man, you are a college man. Is there a quarterback that you can recommend in the draft that I should start watching?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one I like the most is probably Cam Ward at Miami. That guy is electric. I mean, that guy is fun to watch. Now, I don't know him personally. I did do a Colorado game earlier in the year, and Shedeur Sanders on the field is very impressive. Now, I will say this about Shedeur Sanders. I think Colorado probably has the best quartet of receivers in the country, which I think helps tremendously. But he's a pretty good player, too. Certainly, I like those guys right now more than guys like Carson Beck and Quinn Ewers after watching that Texas-Georgia game. I was not impressed with how either one of those guys, who are also being talked about as first-round picks, wasn't real impressed with those guys. I would say the guy I'm highest on is Cam Ward, with Shedeur Sanders maybe coming up behind him.
I'm so glad you mentioned the wide receivers, because everybody talks about Travis Hunter, but Wester, Shepard, Jimmy Horn Jr., like, they seem to have cloned Travis Hunter of, like, just blazing speed dudes, and they're like four or five deep.
Yeah, like, well, so Travis Hunter and Jimmy Horn Jr. would be one of the best pairs of receivers in the country, right? Everybody knows that. They kind of were last year. Well, then all they did was add the guys that broke every record at FAU in LaJonte Wester, and the guy that broke almost every record at Vandy in Will Shepard. Those are their number three and number four guys. So when you game plan against Colorado and they're in those four receiver sets and you've got your third and fourth corners out there, your third or fourth corners are now – that's why so many people play so much zone coverage, because your third and fourth corners are going against – number one, proven number one to other FBS schools. So that's been a big edge, a big help, certainly, for Shedeur Sanders.
If only Deion Sanders had this kind of commitment to finding good offensive linemen, it would just maybe look even better at Colorado. Ross, we're excited to have you in the call on the Ravens-Browns game this Sunday. Excited to have you in town this week. Enjoy it, my guy.
I will. I can't wait. Thank you for the dinner recommendation. I think Taco Bell will be lovely.
Yeah, I think this is new place. It's called, I think it's French. It's called Burger King. I think you can really, really get a nice, they call it the Whopper. I think you'll love it.
Thanks, man. Have a great week. Later, dude.
Later, dude. Ross Tucker there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That was Odyssey NFL Insider. Ross Tucker Insider Calls, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Just sell that one just for my buddy. Now, when we come back, we'll react to Ross's thoughts on the immediate future of the Cleveland Browns on 92.3 The Fan.